Hello and welcome to Mohawks Meet the Team series, a podcast dedicated to the team behind creating the strategy title, Old World. We'll get to know more about the team and their work on the project. This week, we sit down with Mark Shahan, the lead artist for Mohawk Games, and we learn about his lengthy history with the video game industry and much more, so stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Very glad to have you. So as part of our series here, we are trying to get to know people a little bit better, and I'd like to know a little bit about you. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself in general?
I am a people. As you said, my name is Mark Shahan. I'm the lead artist on Old World. I've been in games for quite a while. Started in 96.
So you've started games in 96. So that means you're going on some 24 years of experience now. Actually, 25 years.
Yeah, this is my 25th year.
Congratulations. That's a long time to be in the industry. So I imagine with that kind of experience, you've kind of gotten to the point where you really know what you want from the industry, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been really lucky in the jobs that I've had that they've all complemented my skill set really well. Like, I know a lot of people, you know, they have their terrible jobs here and there that they just did because it, you know, paid the bills at the time. But I really haven't had that experience. Every job I've had has been great. I've been able to improve and grow in each one. So I really have, you know, no regrets.
That's fantastic. So tell me a little bit about more about your background. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in West Virginia, in Charleston, way down at the bottom. Very blue collar Appalachian. I actually lived in a little suburb outside of Charleston, population of about, I think it's about 8,000. So pretty small. Not a lot of opportunities there. So when I was able, I left and moved to Pittsburgh. My education is actually a kind of funny story. When I was young, I was pretty early diagnosed with dyslexia. I was never a good student, and that sort of explained why. And in the third grade, I think it was, I was actually held back because I still didn't know how to read. And from then on, even though I was held back, I was still never a good student, right? So I got into high school, and I was already one year back, and I was basically failing the 11th grade. So I had another year and a half left of high school. But since I had been held back, I was old enough to get my GED. So I'd always been much more into art than I was into like studying. I'd be the kid back there drawing skulls and stuff, rather than taking notes in class. So I was sort of destined to do art because I wasn't good at anything else. But yeah, rather than finish high school for another year and a half, I just went and took a weekend test, got my GED, and went off to art school.
You know, there's that anecdotal conversation that, like, you know, every parent would have with their child about, you know, you'll never do anything with that art degree. And here you are doing something with that art degree.
Well, I mean, the degree itself really doesn't do a lot. I mean, it got my foot in the door, but you know, there are a lot of friends that I went to school with that now aren't doing anything art related. So it really comes down to, you know, what's your drive? Are you capable of kind of doing it on your own? Really, all art school does is sort of put the pressure on you to do some work, right? And then with that work, if it's good enough, then you can get a job. Actually, like, you know, I grew up in the 80s, you know, listening to like Judas Priest and Motorhead and, you know, looking at these album covers with like hot rods and, you know, naked women and demons and stuff. And that really sort of influenced me. So when I went to art school, I actually wanted to be a fantasy illustrator. And when I graduated, I fully had that intent to be a fantasy illustrator. My portfolio showed that. But on graduation, the school had a portfolio review where all of the students would set up like a science fair type foam core thing and put their artwork on it. And then they would invite local businesses who might need artists to come and basically recruit. And Take Two, or representatives from Take Two, who started actually the entire empire, started in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, which is outside of Pittsburgh. They came to the job fair portfolio review thing, and I had an interview the same day, and I hadn't thought about games, hadn't really wanted to get into games. You know, this is again in 96. where there, you know, back in those days, there were no game schools. It wasn't really a career track that people thought about, even though, you know, there was a thriving game industry. But, you know, in talking to him, I was like, this sounds kind of cool. I ended up taking that job. And the first couple of things I did in the games industry were actually print illustrations. So I was like, okay, this is not so bad.
And for someone who's ignorant, so what's print illustration? What kind of stuff is that?
Oh, that's like magazine pages. You know, it was a game called Callahan's Cross Time Saloon. And they had like illustrated paintings for their ads. And I did, the first one I did was really terrible. They wanted it like the next day, and I just didn't have enough time. And I'm this student straight out of school, first assignment I get to, you know, to prove my worth. And it's like, we needed 24 hours. And I made all kinds of mistakes. I painted the thing in oil paints, and they needed it in 24 hours. Oil paints don't dry that quick. So when I scanned it, half the painting came off on the scanner. Oh, it was terrible.
That's awesome. So what other kind of work experience have you had? So you started with Take-Two, but where did you go from there?
Yeah, so Take-Two in Latrobe, that was the first Take-Two office that, you know, spawned the whole empire. And so I was at Take-Two for 4 years or so, and then they closed that office down. That's kind of a theme. And if you talk to many people in the games industry, you know, that have had a relatively long career, there's a lot of, well, the studio closed down or laid offs or whatever. They closed down the Take-Two office. The only other game in town, pun intended, was a smaller developer named Dreamforge Entertainment. So I went there and was there for a little over a year, and then they closed down. So I freelanced for a little bit. And then some of my friends from Dreamforge had gone to Big Huge and then transitioned from Big Huge over to Firaxis, and I started hearing about Firaxis. And at the time I was playing Civ 3 and really enjoying it. So I heard that they had an opening. I applied and I got it. And first thing I worked on at Firaxis was Sid Meier's Pirates. And I remember the day I started, they, you know how it is. They don't have everything set up yet necessarily. You don't know exactly where you're going to fit and what you're going to be doing. So Sid had just developed a prototype for the ship combat. And they're like, oh, here, play this for a few minutes just to get an idea of what the game's about. Because I hadn't played the original Sid Meier's Pirates. And I played that little ship demo all day and had a blast. There was no score. There was no, like, you know, way to really define success, but there was just something about it. And that's really when I really learned that game design is something you can't really describe, you know, it's just find the fun, as he used to say.
Yeah. And what a classic to work on. I've fond memories of both the original and the, you know, the follow-up. Just really wish that they'd come out with a new one, because I really want to revisit that like type of game.
I honestly don't play a lot of the games that I develop, because it gets hard to see the game for what it is, because you know it's in the sausage, right? So it's hard for me to enjoy a lot of the games that I make. But Pirates was one of those that I just loved it. It was so simple and so elegant, but there was always something to do. You know, it was just really great.
Yeah, I sunk many hours into that. So what was your role there with Pirates?
So I did characters on Pirates, sort of at a senior capacity. I actually did most of the sort of the main characters, and a lot of the other characters were sort of derivatives or modifications of the ones I did. So I did the player character and several of the governors. I did the prototypes for the three daughters. That was that was interesting, because for anybody who hasn't played it, there's a little mini game where you can woo one of the governor's daughters. And based on how well you do, there are sort of three levels to that. And so I was just thinking, okay, you got an ugly daughter, you got a plain daughter, and you got a gorgeous daughter. And Sid was like, no, we don't want an ugly daughter. So it was kind of funny trying to navigate, you know, how his mind worked for, well, they have to be each distinct, and one is clearly better than the other, but they all have to be, you know, desirable. And so,
yeah, you know, just talking about this and reminding myself of this game, I want to go fire it up again. So where did you go from Pirates?
after Pirates, the next thing was actually Civ 4 with Soren. So that sort of segues into how I got into Soren's sort of sphere and eventually Mohawk. Civ 4 is actually one of the other, probably the only other game that I developed that I played. I still think Civ 4 is the best one, though many people might shun me for that.
Oh, no.
But maybe I'm a little biased.
No. I run a 4X game site, and I mean, to this day, there are still many people who consider Civilization 4 to be the ultimate of the series. So I basically, anyone who's had an experience with the series for a long time now, you know, has been around for a while and has seen the iterations, you know, would agree with that sentiment. So you're not the only one.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Civ 3 and then Civ 4, which was, you know, which Soren, you know, both for the most part, as far as I know, anyway. You know, they really had that perfect balance of complexity, but just have fun, you know, where the consequences of doing something stupid were never great enough that you were too scared of doing something stupid. You know, I feel like the, well, I'm not going to do a dissertation on Civ, but for me, the later ones started getting a little more complicated and a little too math heavy for my playstyle.
What were your responsibilities with Civ 4?
So back in the day, the, you know, like now in the games industry, there are all these specialties where you're a character artist or you're an environment artist or you're a prop maker, et cetera. Back in the day, that didn't really exist. It was just you were a game artist. But not a lot of people were good at characters or organic modeling back in those days. Like, you know, we didn't have the resources that we have now with ArtStation and all these great tutorials on YouTube that tell you how to do things. So I think character modeling was a little less approachable than some of the other things. And I sort of showed an affinity for it. So I was always sort of put on characters because just sort of out of necessity, I like to do it. I could do an okay job at it. So that's kind of what I ended up doing for all of my time at Fraxis. On Pirates, I did characters. On Civ 4, I did leader heads. And then went on to another Civ game after that, Civilization Revolution, and to not just keep doing the same things, I switched to units.
So while working on Civilization 4, were you aware of just like the impact that
the gravity of it?
Yeah, like the gravity of it or the impact that series had had on the gaming world in general?
Well, I mean, I knew Civilization from, you know, when I was a kid. Like, I liked the Sim games, although I never played Civilization. I played a lot of SimCity. And, you know, I'd heard of Civilization, I'd heard of Sid Meier. So growing up in the 80s, I was obviously familiar with Civilization and Sid Meier. I never really played Civ. I loved SimCity. I think I even played some Sim Ants. But then it sort of just fell off my radar. Like, Civ is one of those things in the game industry that everybody is aware of, right? Like, but when I got to Firaxis, like, I wasn't aware of sort of the pedigree of Fraxis, right? It was just seemed like a cool job with people that I knew. I later sort of, I learned by following the forums and listening to what people talk about online, you know, how important that studio and that franchise was to so many players. So I sort of had to learn it from the fans and become a fan of Fraxis, you know, after the fact.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how long did you stay with the Civilization series? Did you just stay with it for Civilization 4 and then Revolution?
Yeah, so I was at Firaxis for about 4.5 years or so. Those are the two Civilization series I worked on, Civ 4 and Civ Revolution. I mean, I loved Firaxis, and still to this day, I have warm, fuzzy memories about working there. It was a great experience. But a studio opened up literally across the street that was making a fantasy RPG. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, 80s demons, you know, elves and, you know, naked women and chrome skulls and things. So that was too hard to pass up. So at that point, I applied to and was given a position at ZeniMax Online Studios to be the lead character artist on The Elder Scrolls Online.
Wow. Okay. So that seems like a bit of a jump. So how was that transition?
You know, a lot of people would think that switching styles on a dime is, you know, is the biggest problem, but it's really not. Like, being in the games industry, you switch styles from project to project almost every single project, you know, and you need to learn to be adaptive in that way. The biggest transition, though, was just the scope of the game and working on an MMO and later a live service. It's just fundamentally different. So, for instance, making games or making characters for pirates was you make a character, you put a texture on it, it goes off to animators and it goes into the game. Making characters for an MMO, at least player characters, is not like that at all. It's a recipe, right? And all of the ingredients have to work together. So, you know, every piece of chest armor has to work with every set of legs on both genders and on 11 different races, right? So there's a lot of, it's all modular. So everything has to be made in such a way that you think through how it's going to function with other elements.
Yeah, that does seem like a different work process. I have this character review in front of me, and I think it's worth mentioning and showing because a former coworker of yours, Tom Whitaker, he had this basically these wonderful words for you, and I want to kind of read them out to the audience. But it says, as the lead graphics engineer on Elder Scrolls Online, I worked closely with Mark developing the graphics content pipeline and rendering technologies for character rendering. Mark designed and championed a character system that supported unlimited combinations and customization. Mark is truly talented. He understands the technical and visual issues related to graphics and is able to bring both together. As a result, we are able to bring 200 plus characters on screen with real-time composting, data-driven tools, and great visuals. As a graphics programmer, working with Mark has been great. I can't count the number of times I've bounced technical issues off Mark and gotten solutions I never thought of for lighting, rendering, tools, pipeline, etc. I relied heavily on Mark to support my work, and I would work with him again in a second. It sounds like you've made quite an impression there, sir.
Yeah, I paid him for that. That was an expensive three paragraphs.
What's the going rate?
Yeah, that's actually Tom Whitaker, who is a big reason why I'm at Mohawk now. He's been working at Mohawk for a good bit longer than me, and he encouraged me to apply when an opening came up. We also worked together at Firaxis, so we've kind of been a team for a while. We work really well together.
So were the three of you all, three of you meaning also Soren Johnson, were you guys just sort of in touch with each other that whole time and just sort of as, you know, projects progressed, you'd kind of catch back up?
So I never got close with Soren at Take-Two. He was kind of, you know, or sorry, not at Take-Two, at Firaxis. He was kind of sort of out of my league, if you will. You know, he was the next tier up. So we had a couple of interactions, but for the most part, we didn't work directly together. Whereas Tom and I were often a team because he would be the tech implementation of the art assets that I was creating, right? So we sort of had to develop our pipelines in tandem. So we were often working together to solve the same problems.
Well then, so eventually you do come to Mohawk Games and you start working with Soren. So how's that been and how did you come on board?
Yeah, so Tom Whitaker was actually one of the main reasons that I ended up coming to Mohawk. Like I said, we've been working together fairly closely for a while, and he had been at Mohawk for a good bit longer than, or has been at Mohawk for a good bit longer than I have. And, you know, he told me that there was an opening, but Tom, I have great respect for Soren. You know, he demonstrated on Civ 4 that, you know, he's really capable of making excellent strategy games, which I think most people would agree. And so it was a no-brainer for me to apply. Luckily, you know, we had an interview with Soren and Layla, and, you know, we hit it off. They were kind enough to look past my many flaws and and hire me on.
So what kind of things are you doing for Mohawk Games? Can you maybe give us a few examples of the art that you've created?
So my job on Old World is kind of twofold, right? So I have production art tasks, and I also have leadership tasks. For the production art aspect of it, Soren defines a unit with stats and abilities, right? Like he puts in the numbers that the game needs to have that unit play, right? So then I actually create the model and texture and surfacing materials, all that sort of thing. Then I pass that off to Nathan. Nathan is our lead animator. He makes it move around on top of code that our programmers Moose and Tom have created. And then our sound guy, Steven, gives it sound and brings it to life. So it's all this sort of layering of different disciplines to make one single unit that's compelling for the players. As far as the leadership stuff, since we're such a small team, we've sort of evolved a nice sort of synergy where the development environment, at least the art environment at Mohawk, is much more democratic than certainly I've ever experienced. I don't know that that would necessarily work with another team, but it works great for us. We never sat down and sort of defined what the dynamic of the art department should look like. We let the culture evolve on its own, nurtured the aspects that were working and downplayed the aspects that weren't working. And we've sort of ended up where we're at now, which is a great team that's very tight knit, that everyone feels comfortable and confident to offer their opinion or their expertise on anything related to the game. Artists comment on sounds and sound engineers comment on art. Everybody has a voice that feels like they want to share their voice, right? Everybody's encouraged to participate. So my leadership internally is sort of less pronounced, but we have a fairly robust outsourcing effort. And, you know, obviously managing the output of a larger team is more difficult when they're remote, right? Especially when they speak another language. Ideally, with game development, you're going to have a lot of different artists, right? But you want the game to look like it was done by one artist. So there's a lot of micro tweaking as all the outsource assets come in, you know, to keep them on the path, because they have different artists and each artist has a little bit different style. They make a little bit different decisions, and that stuff can add up after a while. Originally, I was doing the scheduling for those guys, but now we luckily have gotten Amanda in, and she's our producer. She and Layla do an amazing job of making sure that the project is on track and that assets are planned out.
You know, that's something I've never really considered as a player of games, about how of course you've got multiple people creating art for these games. And for, I guess it's got to be a huge challenge for you guys to make sure that it all feels like it's all one person, right? That's got to be tough.
Absolutely. It's a challenge. And, you know, when you do have lots of artists, it's not that I can just sort of dictate what the target is and then everybody else follows. Right? Like, I could do that, but the results probably wouldn't be what I intended. So it's sort of a collaboration and in finding the voice of the team. You know, and finding what's the look like. I do define those targets, and I do say this is what we're looking for. But there's an evolution that happens over time where the team sort of defines a look that, while it's, you know, it should be close to what the original target was, is going to be somewhat distinct. So I have to sort of, the same thing with the culture of the team, sort of nurture the aspects that are on target and sort of downplay and diminish the aspects that aren't. And oftentimes it's a lot of little details. It's hard to describe art. A lot of times it's a feeling. Sometimes it's a very specific thing. You know, this is too big, this is too small, this is too red. But oftentimes it's just, it's millimeters, you know, on a whole battlefield, you know, but those millimeters add up to stylistic deviations that, you know, that end up making the game look like it's just an eclectic assortment of different art bits. So that's probably the biggest challenge.
Yeah, and so there's something else I wanted to share with you, and this is something from Layla, the CEO of Mohawk, and she told me this about you, which is that Mark is one of those people who helped me feel confident in my role in the art department. And she says by no means is she an artist, but that you helped equip her with the tools to critique artwork and to feel comfortable being in charge of some of the art direction for the 2D stuff. And you helped her understand details about modeling and feeling more comfortable with communicating her thoughts. And so she's just really thankful for you, because it sounds like you did a lot to help her understand those millimeters, you know, how to look out for those right. millimeters.
I mean, it's easy when someone really wants to learn, you know. I'm happy to talk about art, and she's been very receptive to learning all aspects of development. She's smart and she's driven, and, you know, what's not to get behind?
Yeah, I get a little jealous when you talk about how many languages she knows and how quickly she picks up things
that right?
aren't really her wheelhouse.
No. So, to speak two languages, English and sailor.
Nice. Yeah, I speak two, English and marine. So I got you. So can you tell me a little bit about how Old World has evolved and, you know, how it started off from, you know, probably humble beginnings? You kind of started to have an idea of where you wanted to go with it, at least artistically, and then where it's kind of evolved to.
I'm maybe not the best person to tell you about Old World's entire history. I've only been on the project for about a year and 3 months or so. When I came onto Old World, they were essentially just finishing up pre-production. So a lot of the decisions had already been made. And to a large degree, I had to adopt the choices that had been made, you know, previous to me getting there.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So, I mean, it sounds like just, you know, there must have been a quick hiring spree right before the pandemic.
Like I mentioned, they were just wrapping up pre-production and they were starting to go into full production. So I think, you know, and Layla could probably speak about this better than me, but I think at that point they sort of looked at their staff, as it were, and, you know, looked at the body of work that needed to get accomplished for the ship and, you know, made those decisions. And luckily for me, my skill set was needed.
Awesome. So now let's circle back around to who you are, Mark. I'd like to know more about what you do outside of Old World and Mohawk Games. What kind of hobbies do you have?
Pretty much making things is my passion in any capacity that I can possibly find. I've never had a regular job. When I was 15, I started tattooing rather than going and working at retail or something. And I tattooed through high school and through art school, never got a regular job. And then, you know, as I previously mentioned, I got my first game job right out of literally at graduation. So I've been blessed in that regard. Outside of games, basically, I do anything that is even remotely creative, right? Like I've made knives and done the leather work for those. Obviously, I mentioned tattooing. I've done painting, sculpture. I got into silver jewelry making. I've made furniture and lamps. And a lot of times I'll just see something cool that I want, and all the cool stuff is always expensive, so I'll just make it myself. Nowadays, it's getting really cool because all of these technologies like 3D printing and CNC are getting affordable. So now I can take all these experiences with sculpting in ZBrush and modeling stuff on the computer, and now just, you know, make them real. So that's super exciting, and I'm getting more and more into rapid prototyping and that sort of thing.
All right, you definitely piqued my interest when you talked about making knives. How does that process go?
Well, there's two different ways to make knives. There's to forge them, and then there's stock removal. Forging is, you know, hammer and hot steel, and stock removal is you buy a piece of steel that has a knife in it, but it's not there yet, and you take away everything that's not the knife. And then there's, you know, heat treating and handle making and that kind of thing.
Very cool. How long does that take? I mean, if you were to start from the very beginning and you're knocking away the metal and heat treating it and making the handle, how long does that take?
Well, I mean, if you really hustled or, you know, had a lot of meth, then you could maybe kick out a knife in a day. But for me, it wasn't so much about having the knife, right? It's about the process, and it's about making something that's unique, not something that I could just go to Walmart and buy, right? So I would spend a lot of time designing the knives actually in 3D and then, you know, making them that way. And I'd spend a lot of time on each of the little details. And one of the nice things about having so many hobbies is that a lot of it sort of feeds into the other. So since I had done work with silver, then I could do, you know, elements on the knife that were silver. And since I did leather work, I was able to make sheaths. And, you know, I learned how to etch metal when I was playing around with making PCB boards, right? Like actually etching art onto PCB boards. So I, you know, that taught me how to etch the steel on the knives. So it all sort of ends up working together. And I find that the more skills that I acquire, the more I'm able to both hit the ground running on a new hobby, but then also bring something new to it.
I'm very jealous because I don't feel like I have that creative bone. In fact, everything I do, I just copy from others. So I wish I had like the idea to see, like the ability to see something like that and to create something new and perfectly unique like that.
It's always a trade-off, right? Every other part of my life is terrible and a disaster. You know, it's a trade.
Well, yeah, whatever deal you made with the devil, I hope it was worth it.
So far, not too bad.
Great. That's great to hear. I mean, are these things that you make for yourself, or are you making these to sell as well?
Honestly, it's mostly things for me, or more often than not, it's gifts, right? Because I can make things that would be pretty expensive to purchase, you know, so I can make a really nice thing and give as a gift. And that's always fulfilling. Like I made my nephews some knives, and they're in their mid-20s, and, you know, tattoos are all the rage for mid-20s kids, but they're expensive, especially if you're in your mid-20s, you're probably not making a lot of money. So that's where all my tattoo efforts go these days.
All right, Mark, I need to be friends with you then. We need to start to culture this friendship, because I want knives and tattoos. That's like my life.
Right?
But I understand that you've also maybe had some hand in making furniture too.
I dabble. So furniture is one of those things. It's almost like baking, where you kind of need to do it right or not at all. So I'm better at making like lamps and things like that, which is basically just a sculpture with a wire running through it. But yeah, I have a few projects going on right now, making some side tables for my room. Again, because they're, you know, anything high quality and like real wood is, you know, a couple $100 for a side table, you know, and cost you like $40 to make it. So then refinishing furniture, and oftentimes with things like that, it's really just I'm too cheap to pay for the thing, but I want a good thing. So I'll just, you know, spend my time to make it.
Yeah, not many people can say that, because most people will have to buy that thing. So that's really cool that you can be like, you know what, I want that, and I'll just make it.
I'm very happy for my aptitude. I don't really take a lot of credit for it. You know, a lot of it's just genetics, but I am grateful for it.
All right, so you make games, and I can, you know, just based on the other interviews I've had with the other people, I can tell that sometimes that kind of takes away from your ability to enjoy playing games. Are you able to play games still?
So, yeah, I mean, I can play other people's games just fine. I mean, you do sometimes see behind the curtain, because you can sort of predict perhaps what the AI is going to do or something, but that really doesn't take away from it too much. My biggest problem with games nowadays is that as I get older, I find that I'm less capable of doing the Twitch moves, you know? Like when I was a kid, I grew up on NES and Sega Master System, and then Game Boy and Super NES and N64. Like I had all of them. But as I get older, I'm just not good enough to play anymore. Like Fortnite, there's no way I could even sort of compete with some of those people. So, you know, these days I end up, you know, working a lot, making a lot of things, and playing solitaire.
I understand.
As pathetic as that sounds.
It does sound a little lonely.
It's good if you can be happy being by yourself, you know, with the pandemic.
For me, I agree. I actually enjoy time to myself. But, you know, when you have kids and a wife and all that, you just, you know, any moment you have to yourself, you're just excited to get.
Yeah, I've sort of dodged that bullet. I discovered, you know, sort of in my mid-30s, that I'm probably a little too selfish for kids, you know, because like I'm a perfectionist, so I would want to like raise the shit out of those kids, right? I would want to give them everything and you know, be a perfect father. And I'm like, but at the same time, I really like spending my own money.
I wrestle with that, right? It's a very delicate balance, because on a lot of levels, you need to remember to be selfless, but like your natural instincts are to be selfish. Right. So yeah, I understand. Right. Do you watch any television shows, or do you have any favorite movies?
I mean, I basically just, like everybody these days, just, you know, mainline Facebook, Netflix.
Facebook's the best answer.
I stay off of Facebook. Right now, I'm actually watching, what is it called? Dragon Prince on Netflix. It's kind of funny, because there are two characters in that cartoon, and it's Rayla and Soren.
And that's such a good show too. I'm not really into anime that often, but that's really a very good show with a very good story arc that I just really like.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, as a rule, I'm not into anime. Although my personality is such that I'm not really into anything. You know, it's if I see something, if it appeals to me, then I do it or I watch it. I don't really have, you know, categories of things that I'm super passionate about, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm usually a jack of all trades myself. If I like it, I like it. And sometimes it just happens to be outside what I'd consider my norm.
Right.
So one question, a bit of a philosophical question for you, is that we're starting to see technology replacing artists in some ways. I mean, where do you think the future of art is headed, and how do you think that you can make sure that like a human artist isn't kind of replaced by technology?
Well, I think it's a bad idea to rage against it. I think your heart's going to be broken if you do. I mean, I've seen the software continue to get better since, you know, since I first got in the industry. And, you know, it's going to continue to happen. Fortunately, there's a sort of counterbalancing curve, right? There's automation going up. And the counterbalancing curve is that players are more sophisticated and expecting more and more. So the art teams have to get bigger to accommodate it. So at least so far right now, those two things are kind of balancing each other out, and artists aren't losing work because of it. But I mean, back in the day, we would hire someone just because they were good at making humans, or because they were good at creating cloth, or because they had a knack for doing, you know, texturing a certain way. And now a lot of those things are just done by the software. There's software to make excellent cloth that's super realistic. There's software that makes materials literally as easily as clicking a button. Now, they don't quite have the sophistication yet that an artist does, but it's not difficult to see that that's not far off. I think as an artist, my goal has to be to continue to find ways to add value, and not just in being able to sculpt cloth or, you know, drag textures on.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you said that, you know, don't rage against it. That's a great point. You kind of have to embrace it and roll with it, right? So you have your work lined up for you with Old Worlds, and we're kind of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. So what can you tell me about what's after Old World?
Old World 2?
All right.
I don't know. I'm not making a public announcement or anything. I would love to continue to refine Old World. I think we have an amazing platform that has a lot of depth, and I think there are a lot of ways we can go with it. So I'm happy to do that. It's not in my pay grade to determine what we do next, so I'm happy to go wherever I'm needed.
Just start sending them drawings of things that you want to do, and don't back down.
Yeah, I considered it, like, you know, I mean, I've got a I've been toying with a mod for a while, and I considered you know, just doing some little bits, and then being like, here, look how cool this could be.
Exactly. Yeah, just start throwing some like fantasy elements into it, you know, and then the next thing you know, you have, exactly, you know, a Game of Thrones. Oh man, that's got me.
Yeah, right, really excited. Right.
Yeah, I like this. We're gonna make it happen.
I mean, the problem is though, is that, you know, free time is never free. So
yeah, exactly. I understand that. So, well, Mark, is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, I think you've encapsulated me. All the interesting parts are recorded now, so everything else is boring and lame.
Well, where can we find you if we want to find more of your art and maybe, you know, stalk you on social media?
So I swore off social media several years ago, and I highly encourage everybody else to do it. You can find me on ArtStation, though, if you want to see a little bit of what I do, artstation.com/Shahan, S-H-A-H-A-N.
And of course, that'll be linked in the description below. So be sure to check it out. And hey, Mark, thank you so much for letting me in on your life, and also for encouraging me to encourage you to make the Game of Thrones mod that needs to happen.
Thanks, Rob. It's been a pleasure. Deep.